Ta'alofa and welcome to the Samoan Scientist Podcast. This episode, I'm talking about all things Samoan traditional diet. My name is Amy Mazza-Miller and I'm a PhD student researching the Samoan traditional diet to see if it can prevent the onset of type 2 diabetes of Samoan women here living in New Zealand. As part of my research, I do a literature review, so that means I look at all of the written work that has been carried out in relation to Samoan traditional foods. And so today I want to share with you what I found in terms of the literature. So for me, when I'm talking about the Samoan traditional diet, I'm talking about food that was eaten by our Samoan ancestors during the 19th century, mid-19th century to 20th century. So this is when the missionaries came to Samoa. The first missionaries came to Samoa in the 1830s. And a lot of them recorded their journeys there. What we have to bear in mind is that when the missionaries came to Samoa, their idea was to spread Christianity. And so when I'm reading their accounts, they have other agendas. They are not Samoan, so they don't necessarily know all of the language and the customs. And that's just something that I bear in mind when I was reading through the literature. For us as Pacifica, food is not of nutritional value, of sustenance. It also has a really important cultural significance. And when we look at our Samoan food, they are present within our ceremonies, within our celebrations, and there are certain hierarchies even today that certain foods are presented at special events. And this is what I similarly found within my literature review. So when I talk about the Samoan traditional diet, I'm referring to the food that was consumed during the 19th to 20th century. And so from the missionary accounts and also one anthropologist's, the following foods that were mentioned quite often in the literature was yam, breadfruit, banana, taro, and fish. And so those were seen to be part of the traditional diet, foods that were eaten every day. Now, when we're talking about the 19th and 20th centuries, when it comes to cooking food, the main type of way of cooking food was through the umu. So it's a traditional earth oven. So that means the food is cooked above ground. Unlike Māori who have the hangi, their food is cooked in the ground. So with us, we essentially bake foods on heated rocks. And so there are different ways that people create umus now, but essentially you'll create a fire. And then you would place riverbed rocks on top of the fire to heat up the rocks. It is really important that you have riverbed rocks because just normal rocks will actually explode when they're heated. Once the rocks are heated enough, then you would place the food on top. So if we're thinking about in the early 19th century, there's going to be your galo, your ulu, your fa'i, also palasami. So palasami is a coconut cream, which is wrapped up in galo leaves. And so balasamu was mentioned a lot as well within the 19th and 20th century. You then seal the food with a first layer of fa'i leaves, ulu leaves, and nowadays the outer layer being sacks or old mats. I believe back then it would just have been more leaves. And there are variations of how people create the umu nowadays. So the Samoan umu was the main way of cooking food back in the 19th century, but also it is still practiced today in Samoa, particularly when we have gonga'i, so Sunday lunch. What I found really interesting was that there was another way of, another form of cooking, which was called masipits. And so these were primarily used for fermentation of ulu. So big pits were dug out. It depended how much the village had left over. They would then place surplus ulu into these pits. They would line the layer of the mussy pits with whai, ulu, and new leaves. And the breadfruit was prepared by just scraping the skin off and placed into the pit. The pit was then covered with ulu leaves again, I think whai and new leaves as well. And it was then placed in there to allow to ferment. I actually don't know if another layer of dirt was placed on top. Please tell me if you know that. And so the ulu was left in there basically when it was required. And so what I read is that the mussy pits were used as a source of food if a cyclone had happened, because when the cyclones come through, they damage a lot of the trees and a lot of the food. So the food is either whipped off the trees or the trees have been blown over and there's no food. So the mussy pits were a great backup source for severe natural disasters like that. So once you're ready to get the ulu, the pit is then opened, and then the ulu is crushed by hands and then created into cakes, wrapped in banana leaves and then cooked in the umu. So it's kind of like a ulu bread loaf, fermented bread loaf. And the great thing about when the mussy was cooked was that it was tough enough to keep for a long amount of time. And so they were actually used on sea voyages because they could last long periods at sea. So the two main form, well, the main form of cooking was the salmon umu, but also mussy pits were used, particularly in times of natural events like cyclones. One of the key crops that were mentioned was galo. So taro is a tuber crop, which means that the corn is grown underground and that's the primary food that is eaten. We also, in the Samoan culture, eat the galo leaves, and that was really the only main green leafy vegetable that was mentioned throughout all of the accounts from the missionaries. So the galo leaves were used as parcels, either packaged with coconut cream, and that was referred to as balosami. The way that we cook the galo is that we would peel off, scrape off the skin, and then we would bake it in the umu, so place it on top of the rocks. I had also talked briefly in another podcast about the Samoan food calendar, and so galo was also part of the Samoan food calendar described by Turner in 1889. So Mulifa was the month of September, and it was signified as the end of the stem of galo due to dry weather. So the seasons of the calendar were more governed by the type of crops that were grown, not by the months that we have in our Gregorian calendar. From missionary accounts, Samoans would predominantly eat ulu, and the other half of the year they would depend on galo as their staple carbohydrate, which is interesting because I feel now that galo is more dominant within our diet in terms of if we're looking at Samoan traditional foods. During the 1900s, the planting of the galo as well as the ta'amu, which is the giant taro that we have in Samoa, were carried out on the south coast of Upolo and on the northern side of Upolo, planting of galo, fa'i, coconut occurred in January. So this was an account from, again, a non-Pacific, I think it was like a geographer in 1955, that they saw that there were different planting areas for particular crops so that grew well. So they recorded that on the northern side of Upolo there were a lot more taro, bananas, cocoa and coconuts planted. Back in 1931, Buck had recorded that The galo was planted using the osso. So it's a thick wooden stick about 152 centimetres to 182 centimetres long with a blunt end. And so that would have been stabbed into the ground to create the holes to plant the tiapula, which is the top of the galo. So it's a cutting that we use in order to grow the galo. And there's also a picture of a man standing in a plantation holding I assume it's an osso, but it does look a bit small, but it could be surrounded by a galo. So that photo was taken between 1893 and 1914. So during my readings, I also came across yam. So we call it ufi, which is really interesting because ufi is not common in Samoan now, but back in the missionary accounts, it was a common plant. So ufi is actually a vine plant, and it takes a lot of time for it to grow. It was commonly baked or boiled, so you know, baked in the umu, the Samoan traditional oven. There were several varieties of yam in Samoa. Some were cultivated, others were grown in the wild. So what is really interesting is that when we look at the Samoan seasonal calendar, the yam was in a very important part of the Samoan seasonal calendar. So January, February, March and May were the crucial times of the year related to the yam crop. So the month of January, Utuvamua, has a range of interpretations, but the first was that the yam digging, which states that the ufi harvested from the wild were dug first, so that's in the month of January. February Tua Utuva refers to the continued digging of the yam crops, so we're still harvesting during the month of February, and March was Fa'afu, and it's described as ufi vine and other plants wilting, so dying off. So from January, February, we have the harvesting of the yams. And then when we come to March, that is the end of the yam season. May, Nu is the ufi stem that has been crushed, equating to the month being unsettling due to the change of seasons. So the ufi was an essential crop of the season, and many months were named after the yam. But I found it really interesting that the yam basically dictated the majority of the Samoan seasonal calendar. So in my mind, it shows the significance of the crop. This was only one recording that mentioned this, but during Buck's records, who was an anthropologist during 1931, he recorded that the ufi was a scarce crop that required much labour, and so the scarcity of the ufi may have contributed to its chiefly status, as it was an essential food that was presented to visiting chiefs, along with the galo, galo for a taisi, which is a galo dish, new and chicken. So if the pigs and galo were scarce within that village, then the ufi, the yam, would have been served to the chiefs. And so for me, that emphasizes their chiefly status. And so with that account by Buck, then it also makes me think, well, if it was a, you know, crop that required much labor, does that mean it's qualified within the Samoan traditional diet? But then other missionaries talk about it quite commonly, like that was always present within the Samoan food that people had every day. What is also interesting is that parts of the yam, such as the leaves, tubers, rhizosome and stem, so that's stem coming out and the rhizomes, the little ones coming out, for medicinal purposes, including heart attack, diabetes and cancer. And so further on within my literature review, I discuss health benefits of each of the foods, which I will mostly talk about within another podcast episode, because it is really interesting to learn about the health benefits and what has been done so far. Moving on to ulu. So breadfruit. Breadfruit is actually a starchy crop. It's not a crop. They are green, basically round balls with like a raised texture on the outside. So ulu is harvested using a long pole. I remember some, I think in Hawaii I've seen photos where the long pole will have a little net on the end so you don't cut it and then damage it once it falls off the tree. And the trees can be very high. So, I mean, I don't like heights, but I think, you know, you can climb the trees if you want to, but they're commonly harvested through a pole. Again, the ulu was used within those masi pits, and they would be basically the leftover ulu from harvest would be placed into the masi pits to ferment. The ulu was also an important plant for creating the whales, so the Samoan traditional houses. The Samoan traditional houses have a domed roof and they have no walls. And so the trees were very strong to create the structures of the whales. I'm not actually sure if they actually constructed the roof. If someone knows that, please let me know, because that'd be really cool to know as well. Moving on to coconut, niu, which we call on Samoa. So what is really interesting is that the niu was already at the Pacific Islands when our Polynesian ancestors migrated there. And that's because when you look at the coconut, it is a very hard, round structure. It is actually a seed. And what's really cool about the coconut is that it can float, it's buoyant. And that's how it's dispersed to the Pacific Islands. Whereas when we think about our galo, even our yam and our breadfruit, that requires a planting, like the tiapula, to physically be planted in the ground by humans. But the coconut was already there from the Pacific Islands. So I'm not actually sure where it's originated, but it's been in the islands for a long time. So, I'm not sure if we have dwarf varieties of coconut in Samoa, but now there are the tall and the dwarf varieties of coconuts. I remember some research a while ago that they were looking to create other dwarf plants of like breadfruit, because when significant events happen, like cyclones, then the trees aren't exposed if they're all tall and high up in the wind. And so they wanted to create dwarf versions so they'd be less exposed to cyclone events and it was easier for people to harvest the fruit, the breadfruit. Again, within the coconut is such an important plant, not just for to provide coconut milk, but also to provide coconut juice. There are also many other uses, such as to do with the ofo. There are many myths and legends of the origin of the niu, the coconut. And it actually reminds me, I have a section about origins, myths and origins of Samoan foods. So I would also like to talk about that as well and share what I found. Again, the niu played an important part in the shelter and creation of houses. So the whales, the Samoan whales, they were woven to create screen sheets, thatch sheets for housing, canoes and roofs. Also, coconut oil was recorded as a medicinal plant and it was used to treat earaches, boils and constipation. Also, the coconut oil was an essential part of siva. Siva's Samoan dance, where dancers were covered in scented coconut oil. I also read in a paper as well, which I've written about here, which I found super interesting. I didn't know is that there is an indigenous practice called liotofanga, which means to change one's sleeping place. So it's when the living can spiritually meet their loved ones through the cleaning and washing of the bones of their loved ones in coconut oil. So that meant that when the loved ones have passed away, they would be prepared in a special casket, so that afterwards the family members could then retrieve the bones, and there is a very special process of washing the bones so that the living can feel more connected with their loved ones who have passed. And so I'm not sure if this is practiced today, but this was a paper by Ale Fossio and Henderson in 2018. I can't remember if they said that it was practiced today still, but it'll be in that paper. And so I thought that was such another deeper meaning within our food, like that's a spiritual connection that we have within our food. And I wanted I felt that it was really important to have that within my literature view, to show that for us as Samoans, the food is not just a nutritional thing, it's like a spiritual, it's an identity, it's knowing who we are. Moving on to fa'i, so banana. So this is quite interesting, because even during the 1900s, I found two papers from 1931 and 1968 that described the many varieties of banana in Samoa. They also have a banana called fa'i papalangi, also misiluti, which is called misiluki now, and there's many others actually. And so I felt that it's really cool to have the Samoan names of the bananas, because nowadays we'll have the scientific names. And the ripe fa'i, so the fa'i papalangi and the misiluki fa'i, were eaten as fruit, as they were eaten every day, and compared to the green branches, so the large and bush fa'i, which were left to ripen or they were cooked. So even nowadays, like you can buy banana, but we have it like as a starch. So that's the green bananas that we have. But also recorded back in the 1900s, there was also the yellow bananas that we know nowadays that we would eat. So the fa'i leaves were actually used to package and keep foods together when cooked on the umu. So similarly, like I described palasami, where the taro leaves were used as a package that contained coconut cream. So fa'i malasina is a Samoan dish with coconut cream and turmeric wrapped up in fa'i leaves and cooked on the umu. Similarly, papaya and coconut cream, fa'i esi, was wrapped up in banana leaves and cooked on the umu, as well as the coconut cream was packaged in banana leaves so it would not leak when heated and remain intact. So nowadays we would have our galo leaves and coconut cream and then wrap that in tin foil. So, but back then they didn't have tin foil, so they would use the banana leaves as an extra layer of protection when they cook the palosami. Also the fa'i bark, the banana bark, was used to weave baskets, but and other parts of Polynesia have yet to see this, which is interesting. Buck, who was an anthropologist in 1931, had recorded that green fa'i were ripened through a process known as fa'aotanga. So that meant when green banana bunches, they prepared by dipping them in seawater before being placed into an oblong pit. And the pit was where the green bunches of banana were lined with coconut and banana leaves. And some coconut husks were occasionally lit and placed into the pit with the banana. And then the coconut leaves and the soil were used to cover the hole. So I found this process really interesting, fa'aotanga, as a way of ripening the bananas, because it's quite a process to do that. I don't know, I feel like nowadays if we were to do that, like that takes a lot of time, but that may have been a quick way of ripening the bananas. The other point was lighting the coconut husks into the pit, and so I'm assuming something about the heat would increase ripening process. I'm not sure. I forgot the ripening process, the science behind the ripening process. But it was a process that I had not read about, and I thought it was super interesting that they had recorded that. Lastly, I discussed seafood, particularly in relation to fish, as that was one of the key foods that were mentioned within the missionary records. So when we think about Samoa, it is predominantly surrounded by the ocean, and so there is a lot of seafood back then. And when we think about the seafood during the 1900s, it was divided into everyday type of food and ceremonial food. So small fish and large fish were part of the day-to-day Samoan diet. And another missionary, but Steer recorded 145 varieties of fish that Samoan people ate. So that's a lot of fish, but he doesn't list them. Maybe they were Samoan words and he didn't know how to write them down. So the small fish were always cooked in an afia leaf package, unscaled on a fa'i or ulu leaf. So they were presented on a banana or breadfruit leaf and tied together with a husk, fiber or bark. And so then they would be placed into the omo and steamed. Larger fish were cooked on a coconut leaf. The leaves were brought together on either side to create a braid. So when cooked, the guests would open the package and eat the fish. And I'm not sure if you've seen it before, but I believe there is a story about Maleatua, how he offered up his son to another rival village, and so he was actually braided up into a coconut leaf and served to them, and I feel like that story has a relation to the fish somehow, but I must be talk about that in the next podcast so I have the right information for you. So whingotsa, shellfish, was a popular type of fish served either raw or baked. And due to the vast surrounding ocean in Samoa, the fish was an essential part of the Samoan diet. And it was commonly baked in the umu with coconut cream in a galo leaf package. So some of the ceremonial seafood included turtle, bonito and shark. So the turtle was a chief's dish where the breadfruit was given to the high chief. The sangamoa, the forequarters, was given to the talking chief. Sangamuli, hindquarters, was given to the village maid. So I'm not sure who the village maid was. This recount is from an anthropologist. So the woman maybe. And then lastly, the back of the turtle was given to the young men who did the work. So, and then all the entrails, blood and fat were divided into packages. And so it ensured that all parts of the turtle were used and eaten. And once the turtle was cooked, it was then taken to the, they say, guest house to be divided. Similarly, the bonito is also known as the chief's fish because the fish is divided up only for the chiefs. So the bonito, the ulu, the head, was given to the high chief. The io alo, the size, was given to the talking chief. The io toa, the back, was given to other chiefs. The ma'alo, the belly, was to be put aside, not sure what for. And si'u si'u, to be discarded, not sure why. That was the back of the fish. But this, the divisions of each fish had a purpose, and so I'm not actually sure why. This is what I want to find out. Why were these chiefs given certain components of a fish? Like, what was the meaning behind it? Also, shark was a ceremonial food. Again, it was divided up into certain divisions. So the ulu of the head was given to the taupo. So the taupo was the isn't she the like woman chief? Oh, no internet. I know you guys are yelling it at me, but like, what the taupo is? I just feel like I should know that. I'm just gonna search it up now. So these illustrations are from Buck, which was an anthropologist. He was actually Maori, and was supposedly doing some research in Samoa. So the taupō is a ceremony hostess selected by the village chief to elevate the formal reception of the visitors to a village or place. So that is the woman. The eel, the tail, was given to the high chief. So this is for the shark. The nono, dorsal fin part, was given to the talking chief. The owl for official use. Not sure what that was. The eel, the body, for general distribution. So the remaining people of the village, I'm assuming. And the laualofa, belly, for lesser chiefs and general distribution again. So when we talk about these seafoods, the small and large fish were eaten every day and they were baked in the umu. But when a larger fish, such as the bonito, the shark, or even a turtle, I don't know if it takes more skills for the fishermen, but it becomes a celebration and it becomes a ceremony where each of the fish is divided according to chief's ranks, but also everyone else in the village is made sure that they are is ensured that they are fed. Lastly, with the My Literature Review, I also talked about the Samoan dishes. So from the 1800s to the mid-1900s, Samoan dishes were recorded by Buck, Turner, and Tuvale. So these are missionaries anthropologists. The description of the dishes are similar, and most dishes consisted of coconut cream, vegetables, meat, or seafood. So we have palasami, or palasami was one of the preferred dishes of the Samoan diet. The details of the Samoan dishes vary in their records, and much food was cooked in the open flame, in the umu, or fermented in the masi pits. The Samoan traditional food was grown and harvested and prepared by the people locally, sourced from the environment, because during the 1800s and mid-1900s we did not have supermarkets, and there were no additions of other preservatives, including sugar as well, to the Samoan dishes. So I don't think, you know, sugar wasn't available at that time. So I also wrote that there were vegetable, meat, or seafood. And so what is interesting is that meat was only mentioned occasionally. There are some dishes here that I have never heard of, and I don't think people would want to eat it nowadays. I want to find this one dish that I don't think that I could eat nowadays. So I go and explain different type of coconut dishes, taro dishes, this is an interesting one. Fa'aussi galo or fa'aussi. So uncooked galo is made into flat cakes and wrapped up in lauma papa, which is a fern. So I'm not sure if we still have fern there or if it's eaten. And then once the coconut cream is added, it can be eaten hot, which is known as fa'aussi fuafulu, or cold, where cubes are cut from the cold cakes. Fa'aussi galo is regarded as a ceremonial dish. So maybe that's why we don't see it as much. I also wanted to mention palasami. So the palasami is described as the galo leaves with coconut cream inside. But what they do is that they would add a bit of seawater to the coconut cream and to add a bit of flavor, because that is their salt, their seawater, which I thought was really cool. And again, luau fui, a small amount of seawater is placed into a galo leaf package, then cooked in the umu. There was also lua ilo, which is rotting fish packaged in galo leaves and baked. I'm not sure how rotting that was, but that would be interesting. there was also a record of poi within banana. So ripe fa'i were peeled, mashed with the hands of the person preparing poi. Then coconut cream, the juice of a lime, and the leaves of moi ngalo, which is lemongrass, was added for flavouring. The preparing of the poi was sometimes prepared in front of guests to give them attention. And so this is really interesting because I don't remember poi being common within our Samoan culture, but it is still popular in our Hawaiian brothers and sisters culture. And so I wonder if anyone is still practicing poi today, or that tradition of making foods is long gone now. I was trying to find that that really weird dish. I think this maybe it's sami lolo. So a large coconut is pierced from the top and the juice is poured out. So the empty coconut is then filled with seawater and corked with a dry banana left and left for a fortnight. The water and the new meat, so the coconut meat, are shaken out and cooked in galo leaves as a package. So it's like fermented seawater, fermented coconut meat and fermented fermented coconut with seawater. So that's an interesting dish, sami lolo. I'm not sure if I would want to try that again. No. So when I'm for my research, I look at the literature to see what has currently been written about the Samoan traditional diet. This is common within a thesis. We have to look at written work, but I also acknowledge that as Samoan people, we don't pass down our knowledge through writing. We do it orally. And so that's where I'm going to address the gap in the literature by talking to people about what are Samoan traditional foods. But just from what I've read in the literature, the Samoan traditional diet for me, as I'm defining it, is between the 19th and 20th century. And so the diet was predominantly made up of carbohydrates with fish, whereas the meat was only eaten on rare occasions or ceremonial occasions. The literature also talked about the lifestyle of Samoans in the 19th and 20th century. Many records of the foods are tied to planting, harvesting, and then cooking the foods. And so this takes a lot of energy, takes a lot of time, where nowadays we are very time poor and we're always looking for ways to make things quicker for us. So it's just a very different way of life. So the common foods that were mentioned within the Samoan traditional diet from the 19th to 20th century were taro, yam, breadfruit, coconut, banana, as well as fish, so like large and small fish. But it also highlighted that there were ceremonial foods such as your bonita, the shark and turtle, and I didn't discuss here as well, like meat. So the pigs were a ceremony food and chicken. Thank you so much for listening and learning more about the Samoan traditional diet. If you're wanting to know more about any other foods, let me know and I can do another podcast about that. Thank you so much for listening.